Welcome back, UFOFers and freaky fandomites, to another episode of the Fortress of Fandom podcast. The podcast for tonight, do you guys sit around and talk about nerdy stuff? I'm Garrett, the host, and tonight I am joined by Ryan Jeffrey for the first time. Say what's up, Ryan.
Hello.
How you been through all this quarantine and craziness that's going on in the world right now?
I'm good, man. I've just been watching it all with a clinical eye. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so that's best we can do sometimes. So, tell us a little bit about yourself, Ryan. What do you like to nerd out on? What are some of your favorite stuffs, like superheroes and all that good stuff?
I'm a big Marvel guy. I do respect DC, but I'm a big Marvel guy. I'm very much into Star Wars. I'm a big sci-fi guy. I like Star Wars. I like Dune. I'm big into the Dark Tower, the Stephen King series.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, big fan of those.
Cool. Awesome. Well, it's good to have you on. We're excited to have you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So I guess we'll just we'll dive in. We've got a couple iTunes reviews to read before we get into our topics for the night. Our first one comes to us by Pants Splitter. It says, "Great insight. Give me more. Came across this podcast recently, and it's great for a nerd like me. It's hard not to get just top level content, but these guys do go deep, and it's great. They have a huge Facebook group with tons of followers as well. So now that I've listened, I'm checking that out too. He's from the podcast with my next pick. Good podcast. You guys should check it out." The next one that we have, comes to us from Killer2789, very positive show, really good energy from the host and keeps a very positive vibe. Very good show and a good listen. Definitely recommend. Thank you guys for the reviews. Always appreciated. If you're listening and you haven't reviewed us on iTunes, please do so. It helps us get into the algorithms and get us noticed and everything. So go ahead and do that. And before we get started, we have another promo to play for our friends over at the Amazing World of Talking Shiz podcast. And I will edit that in here.
In a world of utter randomness, one podcast stood out from the bunch, and it was The Amazing World of Talking Shiz.
Sorry, I had to clear my throat there. It's just mainly randomness.
And focus is definitely not focused on at all.
No, our podcast is definitely no theme at all. It's literally random and talk about literally everything and throwing in random jokes at any given time.
Yeah. We're on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. So go ahead, tune in. New episodes weekly.
And we're international.
International.
Very, yes. Very well. So tune in. Follow us on Twitter. See you there.
All right. Well, so tonight, we're going to talk about a few different things. The first topic that we are going to discuss is something I'm sure a lot of people have mixed feelings about, probably a little bit of excitement and hesitation. But next month, AMC is planning on opening a select few theaters sometime in July. They say that they are going to, they plan on showing Christopher Nolan's Tenet July 17th and Mulan July 24th. How do you feel about this, Ryan? Like, are you ready to go back to the theaters yet?
I think with the proper precautions in place, I don't see a necessarily a problem with it. The only problem I would think of is, you know, the big tentpole movie like Christopher Nolan. He's like one of the last few like original blockbuster makers. You know what I mean? So like a lot of people crowd in to see his movies opening weekend. So I think as long as they have some kind of safety plan in place, I really don't see a problem with it. The only thing is, you know, like, I don't know how they're going to handle the seating. Like, if they're going to have like one seat between each person, and how they're going to handle couples in large groups.
Right.
There's a lot of up in the air to me.
Yeah.
Like I go to the movies. I can go to the movies by myself. I like to go to the movies by myself sometimes. So it's, you know, it's not a big issue for me, but I mean, for people who go in groups, you know, I would probably wait to see how it shakes out a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, spacing is obviously going to be a big issue. Definitely not going to get the huge turnouts that people are used to experiencing on, you know, opening nights and opening weekends for some of these bigger blockbusters, for sure. You know, it is going to be interesting to see how, you know, if you're going to have to pre-purchase your tickets online, you know, if they'll allow families and groups to sit together in that aspect. You're right though, with the right precautions and everything in place, I think it'll be all right for the next little while. I live in a smaller town, and so our local theater has been open for a couple weeks now. Hasn't been able to show anything new because everybody, you know, everything's been pushed back, but they've been, you know, showing some of the stuff that has come out to early release, the last couple months.
Like Onward and stuff like that.
Yeah. Some of the kid movies that have, you know, come out and so, and like I said, I haven't been yet, so I'm not entirely sure what their procedure is, but I'm sure it's something along the lines of what, you know, spacing and everything, social distancing, and probably have to wear a mask and everything, but.
Yeah, I hope they don't put up like a plastic wall in between seats, because that's really gonna hurt date night. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, maybe they'll have plastic screens, you know, stacked up in the corner like the booster seats. You know, you just take however many you need and stick it. I don't know. It'd be kind of weird.
Yeah, we're definitely living in the brave new world.
Yeah. I don't know. It's different, yeah, one, for sure.
Yeah, the thing that I was thinking about is that I hope that people realize that the theater model is worth saving, at least for me. Like, it's part of that experience. It's like certain movies, it really just enhances it. Mm-hmm. And I know in recent years we've moved to more streaming model where everybody stays home and, you know, you have the convenience. That's fine. That has its components, but I hope people don't take that theater experience for granted. Because I would really miss it.
Definitely. You know? Yeah. No, there are, if that's, you know, definitely, there are definitely some movies that deserve to be experienced on the big screen.
Christopher Nolan's being one of them.
Mm-hmm, that's probably, yeah. And, you know, Mulan is another one that's probably, you know, that's probably why they pushed it back instead of releasing it like they did Onward and some of those other ones, early release. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how the general public feels about it too. You know, I know a lot of my close friends, you know, being in a small town, they were really, excited when the local theater opened up. But, I know in, you know, bigger cities where it's more of a problem.
I live in a larger city in the Northeastern U.S. So it's there's a lot of competition, you know, for things to do that don't involve crowding in a large space with, you know, a lot of people.
Right.
So, I don't know how they're gonna handle it here. There's a lot of multiplexes. Hopefully they figure out how to fill all those screens.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. It's definitely the new normal is definitely takes some getting used to. Hopefully it doesn't last too long. We don't have to, hopefully they can come out with a vaccine or something here before too long, so we can kind of get back to the normal, how things used to be.
Yeah, I hope more. So, man, because people are getting weird, man. Yeah.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Like, I'm pretty sure pretty soon I'm expecting the people to walk around like, big, like, gas masks with the long tubes, like that guy from Mortal Kombat 3.
Yeah.
What's his name? Cabal.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be, I don't know. If we get to that point, I think we're all done for.
That, or you got to learn how to do like a special ability, like,
yeah, a finisher, move.
Do a few fatalities, maybe come up with some friendships.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. That'd be interesting to see how that goes and what movies they decide to release, you know, in the following months. I know that, like I said, there's been movies that have been pushed back. Wonder Woman was supposed to come out June 5th. It's now pushed to November, I believe. Some of those bigger movies that were supposed to come out this summer. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see which ones hold to their new release dates and if any have to, you know, change their plan again. But
I kind of like that there's a little side benefit to all this, is that it's shaking up the, you know, the expected movie release schedule as far as like, you know, November and December are always like award season, you know, quote unquote. All the prestigious high dramas. Now it's going to be filled with crappy, cheesy blockbusters, and everybody's going to be like, what is this? I can't.
This won an award? Why? That's the only thing that came out, so sorry.
Wonder Woman 1984 for Best Adapted Screenplay. You heard it here first.
There you go. Going back to the, you know, early release and streaming, I've said it here a few times, but I kind of predicted that things were going to go that way anyway. Started predicting it like a couple years ago, actually, but it'll be interesting to see which movies also, you know, choose not to really focus on, releasing in a theater, and which production companies, decide to kind of stick with the streaming route. So that's another aspect of the whole thing.
I think that's now where testing is going to be both a good thing and a bad thing.
So yeah.
A lot of movies, like, could you imagine if this happened in like 1986? And like, you never would have seen like Big Trouble Little China in the theater. Never would have made it.
No.
Which, that's a movie that definitely deserves to be seen on a big screen.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah. So like, a lot of movies that are maybe made for the big screen, but that are a little weirder, a little harder to catch on in the mainstream, aren't going to get that chance to make that same impact. So that's a bad thing. But at the same time, there's going to be, I think, more, they're going to be more readily available if you can find them amongst all the other streaming releases. You know what I mean?
Yeah, very true. We shall see. All right, next topic that we've got lined up, Stargirl on the DC Universe. If you have caught up to the most recent episode, spoiler alert, by the way, we're introduced to Wildcat aka Yolanda Montez, played by Yvette Monreal. And it seems like Stargirl is kind of trying to rebuild the Justice Society of America. Sorry, excuse me. And they've kind of already announced that Dr. Midnight is coming, is going to come back, and Hourman. In the show, they are played by Beth Chappell and Rick Tyler, played by Angelica Washington and Cameron Gelman, respectively. But all four of these characters are characters that have not seen a live action adaption yet, and it's kind of exciting. It kind of raises the possibility for some other ones, other characters who could show up. Green Lantern, there's in the show, she picks up the Green Lantern or the Lantern from,
is that the Alan Scott Green Lantern?
It's Stargirl, I guess, is technically set on Earth 2, I believe. Okay. I believe that is the Lantern on Earth 2. The Flash is Jay Garrick.
Right. I saw him in the picture with the Mercury helmet on.
Yeah. I mean, Dr. Midnight the persona was a male in the original JSA. Now the teenage girl is going to be taking on the role, so it kind of it also opens up possibility of maybe
on the CW. You're kidding.
No, well, is it? I don't watch the CW. I haven't watched the CW for a long time, but I don't know. It kind of opens the possibility for another female. We have a female Flash on the CW, but maybe another female Flash in Earth 2, and maybe a female Green Lantern. I don't know. Could be kind of interesting to see where the show takes everything. It's a really good, really well done show, considering all the shows on DC Universe have been pretty top notch so far. So
yeah, for TV budgets, like, they've been pretty
definitely
on the cinematic. Yeah,
so like I said, it'd be kind of interesting to see where they take some of these other males, if they decide to kind of switch it up some more, or if they decide to keep it more traditional with them. I don't know. It'd be kind of, it's a fun show, regardless of what they decide to do. I think it'll be fun. It'll fit the show really well either way. So.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind if they experiment. I mean, look, I was fully prepared to sit here and lie my face off and sound like, oh yes, well, I'm very well versed in the history of Stargirl. I don't know. I did get to watch the first two episodes.
Uh-huh.
I did enjoy it. I thought it was very CW, especially the parts in the high school, but I thought it was very, very consciously reminiscent of another great WB/CW show, Smallville. We all know. I thought, it evoked that very, very purposefully, and it did capture that kind of same feel that Superman was starting out. That was a dirt bike, but I mean, So I thought they did a good job, and I was surprised that they got the cast. The cast is really good.
Yeah, it is.
Luke Wilson and was Joel McHale play Starman?
Amy Smart as well.
Yep, great Amy Smart.
Yeah, there's quite a few good actors in there. I don't have her name written down, but the girl who plays Stargirl herself, she's really good.
Yeah, Breck Bassinger.
Yeah, that's right. yeah, she's really good. She fits the role really well. I'm like you. I don't know a lot about Stargirl. I know that she's one of DC's more recent characters. Like
she's a Geoff Johns.
Yeah, she just definitely doesn't have the history like, you know, Superman or Batman. But she's a very deep character too. I mean, there's a lot of emotion written into her, and in her creation and everything too. So,
yeah, I thought she did a great job.
Yeah,
she was, because the character when you look at it, it's like, okay, she hates her stepdad and she's, you know, brat, blah 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 blah. But I thought she really brought something a little extra to it. You know, mm-hmm. she was very good.
Yeah, definitely. If you haven't watched it, definitely give it a shot. It's a pretty good show. It's like you said, it's very reminiscent of Smallville. So if you liked Smallville, you'll probably like Stargirl.
Which was the first place I ever saw Stargirl, by the way. I never read it in the comics. That was the first when they did they did a two-parter at the end of like season 9 or something with the old JSA. Remember in Smallville they did what was it called? I forget what the episode was. Absolute Justice.
Yeah.
And they had Stargirl on there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I know it's been a while since I've watched. I'm gonna have to go back and I've been meaning to go back and watch Smallville again. It's been forever since I've watched those. Yeah,
I used to live that show, man.
Uh-huh.
I used to, like, that was a show. Like when it was on when it went from, was it Thursdays to Fridays? And then Fridays, it was like, it's supposed to be the death slot. And then it came back and kept like increasing in the ratings. And people were like, why won't this show die?
I know. It was a good show. It was, you know, some of those, I did go back and watch, you know, a couple of the first episodes. And I was like, man, the CGI has not aged well, but.
that's one of my things. I was like, why can't we get a Blu-ray of Smallville? And then it turns out that it's because the special effect, like the show was filmed on film.
Yeah.
So like they can bump that up to HD anytime. The effects were filmed in standard definition. So when you look at it, it just looks like a giant triangle going through a cornfield and everybody's like, whoa.
Yeah. I know we were all, it was so cool back then. Yeah, man, it's some of those CGI scenes are kind of hard to watch now.
All right, now, okay, here's a question. Were you a Clovis guy, or were you a Klonna guy, or were you a what's the other one? I think the other one was just Clark. No, Klex was different. Klex was different, but no, like Clark, which is Chloe and Clark. Like, which one of the three women in the show were you, like, more, did you think had better chemistry with Clark?
So really I'm none of those three. Like if I had to pick between those three, it'd probably be Lois. It's really close between Lois and Lana at first, but then she kind of becomes a freaking hoe bag. At first it's Lana, then it definitely, like, as the show progresses, it's definitely more Lois. But my, like, there are two other girls that, like, when I watch those episodes, like, it just breaks my heart for Clark. The one, and I don't know their names, but the one is the girl who, she has meta powers, and she's crazy the first time she, like, gets with Clark, but then reforms. Yeah. But like then she's hanged by somebody else.
And yeah, she can't he can't bring himself to believe her because Clark's a suspicious dude in that show.
Yes, yeah.
He's very much he's like, oh, I'm, you know, Superman's all about second chances and people, you know, becoming good. But Clark in that show is really just a sort of like, once you're this, you're this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, then there's some other people that, like, you know. He's like, oh, yeah, no. I mean, Lex, for instance, he gave Lex so many
Oh yeah, he is. Yeah, he gave Lex 100 chances.
And it's like, come on, dude. Like, he's the bad guy. No, she was the one. The other one was the Native American chick who could turn into a wolf.
Oh my god. That's I remember the first one. The first one's name was Alicia.
That
was
yeah, the character. That's right.
And the second one was Kayla or Carr or something.
Isn't, something yeah, like that.
Some vaguely Native American / Kryptonian name.
Yeah.
They all sound alike.
Yeah, I know. No, both of those, I mean, they don't have a lot of screen time with Clark, but their chemistry with him was like so well, like so good. And
yeah,
and they both end up dying. And it's like, no, like it's just heart wrenching.
Yeah.
Every time you watch it.
You wonder how that guy ever got anywhere close to normal, the version of Clark in that show.
I know. Like,
but have he ever became anywhere close to the version of Superman that we know and love? Because he'd be more like Injustice Superman, like very paranoid.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, all the stuff that went on is like on a daily basis in his high school, like is just nuts.
Oh God, that was the most murderous high school in North America.
I know.
It's like Twin Peaks High School.
Why? I don't know how the FBI wasn't like crawling all over that place. It's a mystery.
It's like, yeah, no, it's that Kent boy again. I guess we'll just throw that in the back of the file.
Yeah. Well, that's like what, how many sheriffs were there? It was like two or three sheriffs and like they all.
Yeah, they all got murdered. All of them got murdered to death in a Kansas cornfield under mysterious circumstances, and Clark's nearby and just nobody takes note.
The only one that like kind of acted like a sheriff was the female sheriff. She's like, you know, okay, you can't be taking the law into your own hands. Like if I see another crime scene, like we're going to have problems. And
no, I liked her. She was the hard bitten type.
She's like, yeah, she's almost like
a mountain woman.
Yeah. Yeah, she's
it's like, you just watch yourself, Mr. Kent.
Exactly. She's definitely the only one that like acted like a real sheriff. Like all the other ones like, "Oh, you're here again. Somebody's dead and you're here again." Okay, no problem.
Okay, like, well, let's go down check the crimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Smallville.
Got to love
it. Good show. All right, next subject. Avatar, the Avatar sequels. First off, how do you feel about the Avatar sequels?
I am indifferent to the Avatar sequels. I hated the first Avatar.
Did you?
Okay. I didn't hate it. It's one of those movies I couldn't understand how it made $1 billion. How did this make $1 billion?
Yeah.
I get the why, because the special effects were amazing and
right.
It's a visual spectacle, but it's like there's just so little there.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you. Like I have a friend who like went to see Avatar like 12 times in the theater.
I'm like, what?
I saw it once in the theater and I was good. It was a good show. Like it's entertaining, and like you said, the effects are like even today, like they are just mind blowing. I watched it. It was on Disney Plus, and I had nothing to do on a Sunday, so I watched it. A couple weeks ago, and you know, I was still like, wow, this is like very visually entertaining. But the story is just like,
you said he saw it 12 times.
He did, yeah, in the theater.
Well, his weed must have been amazing.
Something something for sure. I don't know. I'm sure it'd be much more entertaining if you were under the influence of something.
Yeah, I can't, like, if you never saw Dances with Wolves or Fern Gully or anything like that, then you'd watch Avatar and be like, wow, holy crap, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I was scratching my head, and I also I was never a big fan of Sam Worthington when he was big for a minute there.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, when I was watching it a few weeks ago,
his name, right? Sam Worthington.
Sam Worthington. Yeah. I was noticing like how bad his accent is, like his American accent. I was like, man, he sucks. Like, some parts he didn't even like try to hide it. Like he was like full on, you know, New Zealand or
I think it was New Zealand. Is he?
Australian.
One of those New Zealand Australian imports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're pretty close. But he's like, didn't even try to hide it in some parts. I was like, good grief, guy.
Yeah, that's a statistic I like to keep, a weird movie statistic, of like how many Australian air imports there are of like actors. For every good one, like, you know, crazy as he is, Mel Gibson and you know, Heath Ledger, Hugh Jackman, and you've got a Sam Worthington or a Jai Courtney just waiting in the wings to stink up the joint. You
know? Right. Definitely.
Although I will give Jai Courtney credit, like I didn't like him in was it Die Hard 5 he was in, I believe. But he was very good as Captain Boomerang in Suicide Squad.
Uh-huh.
I thought that whatever you think of the movie, his part was he was one of the better parts of it.
Right. Just FYI, I had to pull this up because you said something that I've always – so you said Mel Gibson is Australian. He's actually American, but he moved to Australia.
Right, yeah. I tend to think of him – like, because when he first came out here, he was marketed as like, oh, that crazy Mel from down under, you know. Like,
right. No, and
– he's from freaking New York.
Yeah, he's born in New York, but he moved to – is he born in 56, but they moved to Australia in the 60s. So I always grew up thinking that he was Australian too, and then I – recently found out that he was from the States, and I was like, wait a second. Anyway,
so you thought his crazy came from Australia, but his crazy actually came from America. It's very familiar.
Well, New York and Australia, that is a crazy combo.
Yeah.
So but yeah, no, there are I don't know, I guess it's kind of hit and miss with American actors too, you know. They get a lot of, you know, subpar actors from America, a lot of actors, American actors who can't do any sort of other accent, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, like Kevin Costner, for instance, he's like an amazing actor, but his accent in
I think he's a good actor. Yeah. I think he's a good actor. I think he's more charismatic.
Yes.
As a performer. I remember reading about that where he, you know, he said that he didn't have time to do the accent on Robin Hood. He didn't have time to learn because they were, you know, shooting so fast. But I'm like, okay, so how could you not do that? But, you know, I guess it wouldn't have stood out so much if you weren't in a movie with Morgan Freeman and Alan Rickman and like all these master right. thespians just like, you know, showing you up. Like that had to be a tough gig.
Yeah, no, he did the action parts and everything else really, really well. Even his you know, his motivational speech that he gives to all the outlaws and stuff, like it was good, even though it was like if you look past the accent, it was good.
It's like Robin Hood by way of Indiana.
Yeah. He lost his accent somewhere down in Jerusalem when he was down there, but whatever.
Left it in the dungeon.
Anyway, so Avatar, speaking of New Zealand, is getting some backlash from New Zealand right now, or New Zealand locals, I guess, because the government, in order for them to resume filming and production, the New Zealand government has granted waivers, has had to grant waivers to their production company. And I guess they granted waivers to their production company and one other one.
When you say waivers, what do you mean? Like,
because their borders are still closed, so they like okay. they, so everybody had to, you know, go back home for COVID-19, oh, okay. and then like I said, their borders are still closed,
right?
But they're kind of opening things back up, and so they granted this waiver to the Avatar 2 and 3, by the way, are being filmed together.
That always works out well.
It's yes. there are definitely some times where it does and sometimes where it doesn't.
I can only think of one time where it did, and I think, well, it depends on how you feel about the third Matrix. I didn't think it was that bad. And then other people will say that it's like, you know, the sign of the apocalypse. You know, so.
I don't know. It's entertaining. I'll leave it at that. anyway, so they gave waivers to these two different filming companies. And that's all that they have given like waivers to, like for work and some other stuff.
Oh, just those two movies. That's it.
That's the only thing that they're allowing in there to come in their borders at this time is filming companies. So there's a lot of controversy right now regarding that in New Zealand, but I mean, what can you do?
I'm not from New Zealand. I don't have any, but the, as I understand it, like, don't there a lot of their economy depends on like tourism and filming, like the movie mm-hmm. companies come to film there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's like their two main things.
Yeah, that's what I understand too. I think it all kind of really took off with obviously the Lord of the Rings. But you know, I don't know. I'm not from there either, and I have no idea what else they bring in as far as that goes. But I mean, you got Disney basically, you know, funding your economy. I don't know that I would complain a whole lot.
Again, that always works out well.
yeah. But apparently, Stephen Lang is back on the cast. His character, Colonel Miles Quaritch, is coming back for all four sequels.
Wait, what? Didn't he die?
Yeah, yes, he did. Okay. He died hard. he got a huge knife to the chest, I believe.
Well, but, you know, his character's tough enough. Maybe he just walked that off.
I guess, yeah. well, even Lang, Stephen Lang was surprised when James Cameron called him up. He was definitely not expecting it. So, I don't know. It's kind of funny. James Cameron, he actually said about, you know, recasting Lang. He said, quote, "The interesting concept of the Avatar sequels is it's pretty much the same characters and a lot of new settings and creatures. So I'm putting them in unfamiliar places and moving them on this greater journey. But it's not a bunch of new characters every time. There's not a new villain every time, which is interesting. Same guy through all four movies. He is so good and he just gets better. I know Stephen Lang is going to knock this out of the park." So,
that is perfectly vague. That is a perfectly vague statement from James Cameron. I don't know. Like, what? I don't know. What do you make of that? What can you make of that?
I mean, well, you know, in James Cameron, we trust, I guess. He's not made really ever. I mean, he's made a few, but subpar movies. But his list of movies kind of speaks for itself, I guess. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess he's like the. If there's any filmmaker that can put your trust in, even if it's just like if you're a corporation, I guess if you're hiring this guy to do a movie, there's one guy with a great batting average. It's probably him or Nolan.
I mean, that's what he basically used to get the funding to do Titanic. Like he had, I don't know if you know this story, but he basically conned whatever I can't remember who produced that movie, but he basically
I think it was Paramount
and, Paramount maybe
and 20th Century Fox. Didn't they do it together? I think they did it together.
Yeah, he basically conned them into he approached him as like, I want to make a movie about Titanic. He had no desire to make a movie about Titanic. All he wanted to do was go down deep sea diving to explore the wreckage. Like that was his only intent, but he didn't have the money, you know, personally to do that. So he went to these production companies and was like, hey, you know, I want to make this movie and I want to go do this research. So give me the money. And he went and he, you know, had his little exploration trip and, you know, had all this money left over. He's like, I guess we got to make a movie now. And he ended up making, you know, Titanic. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's almost like the story of when they actually searched for the Titanic. I think, didn't they, what was the story? Was the guy who found it, he was like, they were actually on a recovery mission or something, or some submarine, or that was the cover story. The cover story was that he was looking for the Titanic, but they were actually doing a recovery mission for, I think it was like the Russian nukes or something, or some submarine that sank. I think that was the story. But then they ended up actually finding the Titanic.
So yeah,
it's kind of like art imitating life.
I guess. kind of similar. I don't know, but like, yeah, James Cameron.
It's all big one con job.
That's right. Yeah. And maybe James Cameron just wanted a, you know, vacation to New Zealand. That's why he's making these four Avatar movies. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where they go with these four sequels. When I heard they were doing four sequels, I was like, oh my gosh, why?
That's a lot to plan in advance, especially for a big blockbuster.
Yeah. But you know, as I rewatched it a couple weeks ago, I mean, at the end, when he calls in all the other tribes and stuff, there's like, you know, probably four or five other kind of tribes from different regions of the planet. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway.
Some goofy name, like, was it Utopia or
And they were mining unobtainium. I thought that was the dumbest thing. I was like, unobtainium, really? Like that's what you name the metal?
That subtle gem. Very subtle.
Very, very. Anyway, yeah, I was like, okay, I could see them, you know, probably maybe having to go visit all these other tribes. You know, there was a
prairie. Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like I'm just crapping all over Avatar. Like, if you enjoy that movie, that's fine, that's great. If you have something that you like, and there is a particular genius in that it is so generic. Like, you could go anywhere with that story.
Yeah, true.
Like at the end, you know, there's just enough variety in there that you could, you know, springboard into off into exploring different worlds and stuff like you're talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. It'd be interesting to see where that goes. But, all right. Next subject, this week, something most excellent has happened. We finally got the Bill and Ted Face the Music trailer.
This is the one I was waiting for.
Yes. I've been waiting for this forever too. What are your thoughts of the Bill and Ted sequel?
All right. Well, I guess first things first, rest in peace, George Carlin. You are missed.
Yes.
The sequel, I am very, very excited. I don't think I can put in words how much I love the Bill and Ted series. The first one, I saw the first two in the theater when I was a kid, of course. Grew up still loving them. I think the thing I love most about the Bill and Ted movies is that they don't apologize for their heroes being, like, optimistic. Like, yeah, they're portrayed as goofy and not stupid, but sort of, like, airheaded, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they are very... like they're just like happy, just happy dudes. Even when they're facing death, even when they're going through hell, it's just like it's just going on one big jaunt. You know what I mean? So yeah. I love movies like that. I love characters like that. And you know, I was really, really happy to see them come back. The actual trailer, I don't know if I could tell too much from it. It's just a teaser.
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
I really enjoyed it. Definitely, you know, there's definitely a lot of nostalgia in it. you know, a lot of callbacks to the other two movies. I'm excited for it. My only concern with this sequel is, and I don't know if you've thought about this or anybody else has thought about it, but my only concern is sometimes when they make these sequels, you know, years and years after the last movie, they don't typically, the trend isn't, they don't turn out too well, or they don't live up to expectations, you know, Dumb and Dumber 2, let's see, Tron Legacy.
Hey, I like Tron
Legacy. Tron Legacy, it was a good movie, but I mean, compared to the original Tron, like there's, I don't know, it's just like.
No, I agree. Yeah. It's a different movie. It's a different type of movie.
Yeah.
The first Tron is very, you know, sort of, I don't know, whenever I watch it, like the first thing I think of is like Steven Lisberger. He always seemed like very, not cold, but, you know, cool, sort of like, it's like being in a computer.
Yeah.
Like it's very sort of removed from the action. You're sitting back and like the way it's framed, everything is very, you know, like you see everything and everything moves with a precision that's like, it's almost like a computer.
Yeah.
The second one is definitely a big, bold blockbuster.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good, it's a good watch. It's entertaining. Mm-hmm. But like I said, some of these sequels that come out years and years later, sometimes miss the mark, or like I said, don't live up to fans' expectations or whatever, for whatever reason. They don't live up to the hype, I guess. So that's really my only concern with Bill and Ted Face the Music.
I'm choosing to go into it with a little bit of optimism. I saw what was it, the guy Ed Solomon who wrote the first two. Uh-huh. I think he wrote this one as well. And the director is the great Dean Parisot, who directed Galaxy Quest.
So, oh, awesome. I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, he's so I have a little bit of hope for it. The only thing I noticed, and I did notice, and I saw other people commented it too, is that Keanu like doesn't seem to have that same Tedness, but I'm waiting to see if that's like a development of the character or, you know, just something that he's gonna like maybe recapture over the course of the film. Because, you know, you remember, you think back to Ted, and Ted's like this, he's like a big sheepdog. He's like always grinning, and his hair is always in his face, you know. Yeah. And it's a different Keanu now. It's an older Keanu.
Yeah.
And he's in the trailer, and I was thinking about this, like, next to him is Alex Winter, of course, is Bill, but we've seen, like, Alex Winter has lived with this character for, I don't know, what, 20, 30 years?
Yeah.
It's like, people know him as Bill. Yeah. He's been in a few things. He was in The Lost Boys. He did the, you remember that movie Freaked? You ever watch that growing up on a cable?
Long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He directed that. Yeah, I remember that. Ricky Coogan he played.
Oh, yeah.
But he's been Bill in the minds of people he's been Bill. Keanu has been on all of these different, like, acting journeys and stuff like that. It's like he's not the same guy in the mind of the viewer. So it'll be interesting to see how they reconcile that with, you know, him going back in time a little bit to play this this character that he first became famous for. So I hope he can recapture that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I'm super excited about it. You know, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a fun watch. Even just, you could tell from just this teaser trailer, it's gonna be definitely gonna at least try to recapture you know, some of those good Bill and Ted moments and some of the feelings that we all have towards those characters. So I'm excited for it.
I'm really hoping for a station cameo. Yeah.
That'd be pretty funny. But yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. All right. Well, to wrap up this episode, we're going to do, this is the first time I've done it. on the podcast. So we're gonna do a fan cast, of Marvel's original family, the Fantastic Four. So I guess I don't know how we do this, but I've picked three actors for each character that I would, you know, potentially cast in another reboot of the Fantastic Four.
Can I say that this is the hardest thing that I had to do in preparation for this? I had no, because my first choice was everybody's first choice, and then I had a really hard time thinking beyond that.
Right, right.
I know what I want.
I guess we'll let, okay, so this is a, well, let's go through Reed Richards and Sue Storm, because like I said, they're everybody's first choice for those two. I'm pretty sure people can guess. So my number one, I'm sure is the same as yours, is John Krasinski.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my number one for Mrs. Fantastic, Sue Storm, is Emily Blunt.
That's amazing. I hadn't pictured her in the role. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
No, yeah. She it's just so perfect. I can't think of two other people.
I know.
I found it really, really difficult.
I had to kind of scroll through IMDb for some of these other characters, but
it's hard because like there's so many ways they could go with it. Like, uh-huh. If they adapt the Fantastic Four, like, is it going to be a more modern take? Like, are they going to be younger? Because when I think of Reed Richards, I think of like not an old guy, but you know, like a middle-aged
guy,
late early middle-aged guy,
mm-hmm.
like late 30s, early 40s, and you need somebody who, like, is, of course, like one of the greatest intellects in the Marvel Universe, but could also believably kick a little ass if you needed to.
You're right.
You know what I mean?
And John, yes, you did. John Krasinski, definitely that guy. I mean,
he fits that bill. He's the guy.
Well, and nobody would have guessed before freaking
Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan.
Yeah.
My goodness, that was an amazing show.
He was up for Captain America. Did you know that?
I did know that, and at the time I was like, really? I think everybody thought that. Really, John Krasinski, the guy from The Office. Looking back, I think he could have been decent, but
they got the perfect
cap. They did. They got the perfect cap. The casting really in Marvel has been top notch, like, overall. But yeah, I mean, John Krasinski, he could definitely be the the intellectual BAMF that Reed Richards is. And Sue Storm, Emily Blunt, she's also a BAMF.
Right, right.
She's my number one, I believe. Number one Hollywood crush is Emily Blunt. So
yeah, I love that. The thing about them is, like, when you think about Susan, I still call her Sue Storm, but she's Susan Richards. The thing about the Invisible Woman is that she can't be too cold. She can't be, she definitely has a maternal instinct.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she's also, you know, she's down to ride through the cosmos and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? She's not to be trifled with. She's like, a mother lion, basically.
Yeah.
It's very hard to cast somebody with all those qualities that the Fantastic Four embodies. And like Reed Richards, like I said, like, of course he has to be an intellectual, he has to kick ass, he also has to be he's not arrogant, but he has a reserve.
He does, like, have very, an air about him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a scientist. And his science comes before everything else.
Definitely. All right. Well, I guess since we're doing number ones, we'll just number one for Johnny Storm. Who do you have?
I probably have your same guy again.
I posted this today in the Phantom. My number one for Johnny Storm, Human Torch, is Zac Efron.
Yep, that was my number.
And that one would be pretty good. Zac Efron has, I wasn't a fan of his a few years ago, but he's definitely come a long way as an actor. Mm-hmm. And he...
Yeah, what was he in, the John Wayne Gacy movie, was it? Or no, the Ted Bundy.
The Ted Bundy movie, yeah. Sorry.
Those guys can look less alike.
I know. Definitely. It's kind of freakish how close, how similar they look. But he has the acting chops. But he also, like, we all know that he can play a freaking airhead, kind of playboy jock type. He was that in Baywatch. Baywatch was... pretty funny movie, had its moments.
That's pretty good.
The Neighbors movies, it's kind of the same character.
That's what I thought of when I was fantastic him. I thought of him and Neighbors.
Yeah.
Like, the hidden, like, he's an ass, but he actually has a heart of gold.
Yeah, definitely.
So
Zac Efron, he's, probably my number one. Definitely. Benjamin Grimm, aka The Thing, who is your number one?
Yeah, well, my choice is negated by time and space. He's far too old. But like, in a perfect world, I definitely would have cast Ronnie Perlman was the perfect.
Ronnie Perlman would have been good.
He would have been the perfect thing.
Yeah.
But casting for a modern one now, I would probably go with somebody said The Rock earlier. I don't like The Rock. That's like a treasonous statement at this point. I like The Rock, but I would have gone with maybe another wrestler with some chops. Can't remember the guy's name. I just saw him. I just looked him up today. I can't believe this.
God. Older wrestler, newer wrestler.
He's a newer wrestler. God, I can't remember his name. I don't know. I have to look him up real quick. my old brain's getting.
All right, as you look him up, my number one is Ethan Suplee.
Ethan Suplee from Mallrats.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And that's cool. Remember the Titans. What else is he in? My Name is Earl. He's lost a lot of weight recently, and he is yoked now. Like, he,
yeah, no, I saw him. He's jacked.
He's jacked. Like, and yeah. He's, he has the acting chops that he could definitely be kind of the, I don't know, the more grounded of the. Of the group and kind of the brawler type. I don't know. I recently, came across his Instagram and his progression in fitness, and I was blown away. And instantly I was like, he is Thing. Like, he's Benjamin Grimm. Like, that's, he looks the type, at least. So, That would be my number one, for Ben Grimm. Do you figure out who you wanted?
Yeah, I'm looking at the list, and all of these people, none of them look familiar on Google. Like, I swear, I can't even think anybody off the top of the dome right now for a thing. I'm trying to think of who I would pick. Like, I guess if Winston Duke hadn't already been cast as Ibaka, I'd pick him. Yeah. did you see him in the, Spencer for Hire? The Spencer for Hire movie on Netflix?
No, I haven't watched that one yet.
He was very Thing-like in that, very sarcastic and very, hulking and brooding. But at the same time, he was kind of sensitive inside. That's like the great thing about the character. He's like the most... sensitive and touchy inside that
Yeah.
outer rock shell, which is impervious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that would be a pick, but like I said, he's already playing in Baku, so that's a waste of the pick.
All right, number one for Victor Von Doom.
Victor Von Doom.
This was like the hardest one for me to cast because Dr. Doom is like, in my opinion, he is top three Marvel villains ever.
Yeah, absolutely. If he already wasn't in a ton of things, I would have picked Oscar Isaac. I think he's great in everything he does, but he's in a ton of shit.
He's a hot topic right now. He's Cranberries.
He's played Apocalypse. Who else has he played? He's in Star Wars. He's in the new Dune. He's in the new Dune. He's playing Duke Leto Atreides.
Yeah. My number one for Dr. Doom would be Luke Evans.
Good pick.
I've wanted him. So he was actually before Ben Affleck was cast, and they were saying that they were gonna, you know, bring Batman into the Man of Steel universe. Luke Evans was my pick for Batman. Like, that's who I wanted as Bruce Wayne. But I'd also love to see him on the opposite side as a villain. I think he could really bring the sinister side of Dr. Doom to the screen.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's a very good actor. I liked him. He was one of the parts I liked in The Hobbit.
Yeah.
One of the few parts.
He was the better part of the Beauty and the Beast remake. he was pretty.
Oh, he played Gaston, right?
Gaston, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, he's my number two or number one. Sorry. Moving on to number two, we'll go back up to Reed Richards. Who's your number two for Reed Richards?
My number two for Reed Richards was, again, he's already cast as somebody. It's really hard, man.
It's really
tough. Cause like my brain faltered beyond Jock Asensio. Like, I had to stretch for people.
I know. I did too.
If you went with an older Reed Richards, then I guess Hugh Laurie is far too old at this point, but he would be good. He would be good for Reed Richards at a later stage.
Yeah, I could see that. My number two is Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf
mm-hmm.
for Reed. You know what? I could actually see him for Ben Grimm.
Yeah, I could see him for Ben Grimm too.
I could see him for because I've seen him recently. He's bulked up.
Yeah,
and he's very he's another one with a gruff exterior, kind of standoffish, but you know, inside you could tell. Like, did you see Honey Boy? Did you see that one?
I haven't yet. That's another one. It's on my watch list. My watch list is incredibly long.
Break your heart, man.
Like, I'll bet. I've heard amazing things about it, though.
Yeah, it's really good, and he's really good in it too. He plays his own father.
Yeah,
he really. I think he wrote it while he was in rehab, was it? And
that's what I heard.
Yeah, and he really brought it. You know what? I'm putting in for Ben Grimm. Okay. I'm stealing your number two for Mr. Fantastic and making him my number one for Ben.
All right, I'll let you do that. Yeah, he's my number two for Reed Richards. He's a very he's another one that's come a long way as an actor over the course of his career. He kind of got weird there for a minute, but then he like I said, Honey Boy, I've heard amazing things about. What was the last thing I watched him in? I can't even remember, but it was like
last thing I watched him on was an episode of Hot Ones.
Yeah, I watched that Hot Ones.
Aren't those surprisingly good?
They are. I love that show. I want to be on that show. I want to see how far I make it. But hey, I love watching that show.
On the gauntlet, yeah.
Yeah. No, that was really when I watched his episode on Hot Ones. That was really when I was like, okay, I like Shia LaBeouf. Because, before he had all these news stories coming out about him, how he was, kind of a douche and and kind of, I don't know, had some weird stuff going on. But I watched that. I was like, okay, I could sit down. I could invite Shia LaBeouf over to my, you know, over to a barbecue, and like, it'd be cool, you know, not just because he's Shia LaBeouf, but, you know, he'd be, you know, good company. Yeah, he's my number two.
It seems like a real, seems like a real genuine guy.
Yeah, he does. He definitely does. So I think he would, and like I said, he's come a long way as an actor, and, really, you know, loves his craft. So I think he would do really well as, Reed Richards. Let's just stick on Reed Richards. Who's your number three?
My number three, and this would be, a little outside the box, but I would, he wasn't already cast again. Damn you, Marvel people. You've thwarted me at every turn.
I know. They pick so many good, but like I said, everybody they've cast is great.
Like in my Fantastic Four, like, okay, well, I have to go back a little bit. The Josh Trank Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
It was definitely different.
Yeah.
It was, you know, one of the biggest controversies, of course, was casting Michael B. Jordan as the Human Torch and casting Kate Mara as Sue Storm.
Right.
That was a whole big thing. I don't see what the issue was, that they're both great actors. That's the whole separate conversation. But
right.
I think one of the problems with that is that I recently read the Josh Trank made a comment about, you know, he had an issue with trying to cast a black actress for Sue Storm.
Uh-huh.
Because that was his intent. And the studio was like, well, they didn't want that. They wanted a white actress.
Right.
So I think that element of it, like, maybe they didn't go far enough. So, like, I don't have a problem with casting black actors in these roles. So, like, if they, in my perfect world, like, I would put Chiwetel Ejiofor, who of course is already playing Mordo, but he would be a good choice for me for Mr. Fantastic. Yeah.
Okay, it's kind of funny that you say that, because my thinking was kind of along those same lines. Yeah. And it's, you know, not the traditional casting choice. Yeah. But my number three is actually Jordan Peele.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I can see that.
he's come a long way too. Like I say that about, you know, a lot of these actors, but they, like, he started off in comedy. He's done horror. He's, you know, he's, on, Twilight Zone, kind of does a little bit of everything. If they were wanting to go, you know, a little unconventional as far as, typical, you know, how he looks and race and everything, Jordan Peele, I think, would be a good pick.
Yeah. And so, in a perfect world, it wouldn't be, you know, an issue or anything, but like,
no,
like they would have, they think they're going to create a shitstorm. Like, I'm seriously, like,
yeah,
if they want to, we want the best actor for the role. If you want the best actor for the role, you got to start looking outside these, you know, self-imposed lines of these characters who were created 50, 60 years ago. You got to start thinking outside the box.
Definitely. I mean, especially in, you know, the Marvel universe, they say it's, you know, it's based on Earth or Earth 616.
616, yeah.
But we all know that's not true.
Like, of course not.
They can only do so much. Like, so, you know,
Well, that's what drove me crazy about the, like, not to get too political, but, I've seen a lot on social media and stuff, like the history of, you know, fandom being toxic as far as, you know, protesting when they cast people of color to play these characters, and, you know, people get all upset, and it's like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? Like, do you understand the basic roots of these comics? Like, I've heard statements as far as, like, oh, I don't know, I loved these comics before they started getting all concerned with the quality, or making political statements and stuff. Like, these comics were always political.
Mm-hmm.
The X-Men is nothing if not a political comic.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing if not a plea for tolerance and acceptance of people who are different.
Yeah, that was like, definitely... I mean,
that's how tone deaf can you be? You know what I mean?
Civil rights movement. I mean, that was written for the civil rights movement.
Exactly. And then
in the 90s, you know, rewritten for, you know...
Superman, like, you hear a social justice warrior thrown around as a negative term these days. Like,
yeah.
Superman, when he was originally created, he wasn't fighting Metallo and Zod and all these guys. He was fighting, like, you know, politicians and like people who were, you know, robbing in the street, like that kind of stuff.
He was
all about social justice. So that complaint is always kind of run very hard to me. I'm sorry, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
It's all good. No, I agree with you. Like, you know, as long as it doesn't interfere with their backstory, I really have no problem with it either.
Exactly. Like the there was a movement, you know, a few years ago, like, oh, maybe we should get Donald Glover as Peter Parker. And that, like, Donald Glover would be a fantastic Peter Parker, but it doesn't jive with the story. Like, Peter Parker's a, you know, a kid from Forest Hills, which is a largely white Jewish community.
Right.
Like, you know, that's, like, come on.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, as long as it makes sense, like, why does it matter?
Exactly.
You can cast him as Spider-Man. Spider-Man can be anybody under the mask.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's Stan Lee's one.
Right. Definitely.
So, yeah. But anyway, yeah. So back to what we were – back to the topic.
Yeah. Back to fan casting. Yeah, fan casting.
Jordan Peele's your number three.
Okay. Number three for Reed Richards. All right. Let's move on to Sue Storm. Number two for you. Who do you have as number two for Sue Storm?
Number two for me, also kind of tough, but I like, excuse me, sorry, coughing. I like, this actress, Teresa Palmer. She's been in a few movies, not too much. But she's very good. I liked her in a movie called, she's another Australian, import. She was in that movie Warm Bodies with Nicholas Hoult. He played the zombie.
Oh, right. Yep, I remember that one.
And she was in Hacksaw Ridge.
Uh-huh.
And a few other ones. But yeah, I like her for Sue Storm. I think she's pretty good.
That's a good pick. My number two would be Bryce Dallas Howard.
Bryce Dallas Howard. Okay.
I mean, she's one that you know, looks the part. She's a good actress. She's, you know, good in action roles, as we know from Jurassic movies. I think she'd be pretty decent. Who's your number three?
She definitely has the chops.
Yes, she does.
I like her a lot. Which is completely steps on my third choice. But I actually had Jessica Chastain.
Okay, she's good too.
She's good. And like, you know, you just switch redheads.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's really good. You know, she's the It movies were amazing. She was great in those.
I think she's got that sort of a quality where like she's it's soft and hard at the same time.
Yeah,
she would take no shit, but she was also, you know, you could believe that she could be a loving mom.
Definitely. My number three for Sue Storm would be Vanessa Kirby.
Vanessa Kirby.
Yeah. She plays on The Crown, and she was also in Mission Impossible Fallout. She was the, what was her character's name? The White Widow or something like that.
Okay.
She's... you know, doesn't have a lot of screen credit to her name, but she was great in Mission Impossible Fallout. She looks the part. She's like, if she wasn't going to play Sue Storm, I would have her as a mutant. What's the one that turns into diamonds?
Oh, the White Queen?
Yes.
Emma Frost.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Emma Frost. That's right. Okay. So, That's if she, like I said, if she wasn't Sue Storm, it'd be Emma Frost. So that's my number three for Sue Storm. Johnny Storm, number two for you?
You know, for Zac Efron's pretty perfect.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, I can't, it's hard for me to think of, like, you know, one of these young CW kids. I don't know.
I know.
I don't know anybody young. I don't, my actor knowledge skews way older.
Right. I know. That's how I had the same problem. I was like I said, I was scrolling through IMDb for, you know, quite a while earlier today, trying to pick out people that I knew and fit the description, and at least the age wise kind of fit. But my number two would be Alexander Ludwig.
Okay.
He plays in Vikings. He was in Hunger Games and Bad Boys for Life. He's a Ragnar's son. He's, you know,
he's a big dude.
He is. He's tall. He's you know, he's good looking. Kind of fits that aspect for Johnny. So he's pretty good in Vikings too. He was one of those actors, kind of in his earlier roles like Hunger Games, that when I saw him, I was like, man, he's a big dumb dude. Like, he's a big good-looking dumb dude. Like, that's all he is. He's actually really good in Vikings. He's, you know, I don't know, you know, if he's taking acting lessons or whatever, had just, you know, good coaching, or, but he's really good in Vikings. I really like him what's his name? Bjornsson.
Yeah. I mean, you could really get anybody to do, like one of these young kids, like, not Timothy Chalamet, because he's in the new Dune too.
Timothy Chalamet was actually a runner up for me for Johnny Storm.
Okay. But, I thought of a guy. You know who I like? What's that kid's name? Weird name. He was in The Fault Under Our Stars and Baby Driver.
Uh-huh.
You know the guy I mean.
I do.
I gotta look him up. He would be a good choice.
He would. My number three.
Ansel Elgort.
Okay. Yeah. He would be great. Yeah, he's really good. I could see him.
Oh my God, I made it through.
my number three would be Taron Egerton.
Oh, from Kingsman.
Yeah, Kingsman. Rocket Man. Yeah.
Yeah. I just saw Rocket Man, by the way. It was really good.
Really good. It was really, really well done.
I thought it was miles and miles better than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Really? I see. I liked, I mean, they both were different, you know, in their own way. I feel like Rocket Man was more, definitely more cinematic.
Yeah, yeah. The Bohemian Rhapsody was basically like a very straight ahead, almost biopic.
Yeah, definitely.
Rocket Man was more of an experience to me.
Yes, very much so. They were both, like I said, they were both very, you know, very good in their own respect. I like them both.
But Taron Egerton's a good choice. I like him in I love him in the Kingsman movies.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's still a young kid.
He is. He's pretty young. Upper 20s, I think. Maybe 30. I can't remember.
He could be the Human Torch and wash the stink of that Robin Hood off him.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Good grief.
Yeah, that was bad.
All right. Ben Grimm, number two. Who you got?
Wait, I already did two. I stole your number two. That was my number one. My number one was Winston Duke, but he was already cast as Envy.
That's right, and you stole Shia LaBeouf.
I stole Shia LaBeouf. I made him my number one, so I guess I can make Winston Duke my number two.
Okay.
And my number three can be, I don't know. Are we still skewing older?
We can, yeah, sure. My number three is kind of older.
All right, if we want to skew older, I'll go you know what? He was a minor part of – he was kind of wasted in Iron Man 2. I thought Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke would be a great
Okay.
there.
Yeah, he's getting – he is older. He's getting up there.
Dude, he's still a tank, though.
He is.
He's crazy. And he doesn't even need that much makeup.
That's very true. That's very true.
Sorry, Mickey, if you happen to hear this, please don't kill me.
But he was also, he was in Iron Man 2 already. So
yeah, no, like I said, he was in Iron Man 2. It was like a wasted part.
We could just not count it. That's very true.
Seriously, he was in. Have they ever recast anybody from the MCU? I have to think.
Like again, like
that they've used already.
Well, yes, actually, one of the soldiers from Captain America, the Asian one, I can't remember his name.
Kenneth Choi.
Mm-hmm.
My brain works so weird. I know his name. I don't know why. Go ahead.
He's the principal. I think he's Peter Parker's principal.
Yeah, he's supposed to be his grandson.
He's supposed to be his grandson. Yeah, so, right. I mean, it's technically, you know.
Okay, well, in my dream, Ben Grimm is Whiplash's grandson. Okay.
From his long-lost twin brother.
His illegitimate.
Yeah.
Like Anton Vanko got up into some funny business before he got deported to the USSR.
Something. All right.
Hanging around in Brooklyn. Yeah.
That would be, I could, you know. With some of the stuff they've
by a very tortured stretch of logic, and yes, yeah. my choice makes sense.
Okay, no, that's fine. My number two would be John Cena.
Okay, all right.
He's big goofy guy. He's come some way as an actor. He definitely fits the type for Thing.
Yeah, he probably would have been a good Drax too.
Yeah.
Only because you already can't see him. Hey. Yeah, okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all good. My number three would be Steve Carell.
Steve Carell for who?
Thing.
Really? That's a bold choice. That is one bold choice. I gotta hear this one. Go ahead. Why Steve Carell?
Kind of thinking outside the box on this one too. He can play the soft, sensitive type, but he also, as we've kind of seen on Space Force, he can kind of play the rugged.
He can play kind of a hard ass.
Okay. So I don't know. I just think it'd be kind of interesting to see him and John Krasinski back on screen together.
That would be cool.
That would be
cool to see them again.
But a runner up for me, wasn't already in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., would be Patrick Warburton.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
One of my favorite unsung superheroes of all time.
The
Tick.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, live action Tick.
Yes, the original live action Tick.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
And the new Tick is played by somebody else who's already in the MCU, Peter Serafinowicz.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yep. Very, very true. Mm-hmm. All right, last but not least, Victor Von Doom. Who you got for number two?
Didn't I already do two for Doom?
I don't know, did you?
No, I did. I did Oscar Isaac, but he's cast. He's in a ton of stuff. But he's still my number one. If they want to cast him again, who am I to dispute their host? Number two for Von Doom. It's so hard to pick.
Very hard.
Guys who haven't been. You know what? I would pick, what's that guy's name? The guy who played... this is kind of an outside the box choice, but the guy who played Tarzan.
Okay.
You know the guy I mean.
Skarsgård.
One of the Skarsgård boys. Alexander Skarsgård.
Right. Yeah.
I think he's very if he shaves down, doesn't have the Tarzan hair or whatever, I think he's a very both physically imposing and intellectual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, he was.
You've seen him in some things.
Yeah, he. The thing that comes to mind is his role in HBO's
True Blood. True Blood, right?
Not that. No, the newer one. What's it called? With Reese Witherspoon. Pretty Little Liars or something like
that. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever that one was, he was pretty. He came off very charming, very sinister at the same time. So I could see that.
It's his eyes, man. So
yeah.
So Scandinavian eyes.
Those Skarsgård eyes.
They can just size you up in a minute.
That's yes.
It almost sounds like I want to lay with him as a bride lays with a groom. but yeah, no, it's definitely the eyes. I think he would be great. You see those eyes peering at you through that faceplate.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
My number two would be Cillian Murphy.
Hmm. I like that one.
Yeah.
I do like that one.
He was really good as a Scarecrow, really good as a villain. So I think he could.
Yeah, I liked him in the show Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, he was really good in Peaky Blinders. I need to catch up on that actually. So, but he's my number two. Who you got for number three?
For number three, again, went outside the box. I went with. I'm going to butcher his last name. Carol, I saw him on the show on Netflix. Carol Bernacki. Yeah, he's a younger guy. He was on the show called The Border. He's got this offbeat sort of look about him, but like that would be if I were a rival with a guy, an intellectual with a rival with a guy. This would not be the guy I would want to be your rival with.
Yeah. Okay, I could see it.
He's almost got the kind of, he kind of reminds me of like Christopher Walken in View to a Kill, the James Bond movie.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I could see it.
So folks, look that
younger,
up.
He's younger, but that's all right.
Yeah. Folks, look up Carol Bernacki. He's going to be the next big thing. You heard it here first.
Yeah, I could see it. All right. My number three, it's a tie because one of them, I mean, technically he's in Marvel movies, but they were the Fox, X-Men movies. So he technically could be cast again if he was up to play more superhero movies.
Can I guess who this is?
Go ahead.
Michael Fassbender?
Yes. Yeah. Hey.
And I do not disagree, by the way.
Yeah, he would be.
I would take more Fassbender any day of the week.
Mm-hmm, he did great as Magneto. And, if he can pull off Magneto, he could probably most definitely pull off Dr. Doom. But if they weren't going to go with Fassbender, my number three would be Nicolaj Coster-Waldau from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he'd be a good choice.
Yeah, I think he'd be really good. So,
yeah, he's a great actor. So, I wish I could see him in more things over here besides Game of Thrones. He's done a lot of great Danish movies.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in this one movie called Headhunters, which was pretty good, pretty trippy.
I'll have to see if I can find that one. I know he's been in some stuff that I've seen that is not foreign. Oblivion. That was, yeah, I knew.
That the Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. I saw him in some shitty romantic comedy I just saw him in. I forget what it was. Where he's playing some typical, lout. Like where the woman has to, overcome her attraction to this guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, I think he'd be good, though. He same kind of thing. He plays he can be really charming at times and really, a real douche at other times. So I think he could,
yeah, he's a great, he'd be a great choice for that.
So yeah. There you have it. Come on, Marvel. We just gave you tons of options.
Some of them actually good.
Some of them. Yeah. Actually pretty good. pretty good. I don't know. We just need, we need Fantastic Four to be done right. That's all we need.
Yes. My perfect, my perfect adaptation of Fantastic Four, if they were to do it, would be, I couldn't think of it, and this is why I don't work for Marvel, one of the many reasons, like, but this, like, the only way that I could conceive of the Fantastic Four is in the 60s.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can think of it.
It, you know, a set piece back in the 60s might,
right,
you know, it could not, it wouldn't be a bad idea either. Like, yeah, it could work.
Because originally, I think the guy directed Ant-Man, Peyton Reed, I think he was developing the Fantastic Four.
Really?
Wasn't he originally for a while?
I don't know. Maybe. That kind of vaguely sounds...
Well, he had made this, he had made this movie called Down with Love. Remember that? Which was set in a... It's kind of like a Rock Hudson, Doris Day homage. It's Ewan McGregor and I think Reese Witherspoon. And it was set in the early 60s in New York. And it just had this look. It captured it perfectly. So I think that... I think that they had tapped him to develop Fantastic Four for that. I think I remember reading that. And like that would be a, that would be the way that I would do Fantastic Four if it were me, and then maybe they get, you know, lost in some pocket multiverse or something like that.
Yeah.
Come back. But you know, that it, it's hard to contemporize the Fantastic Four and bring them up to modern times. That's like why the comic itself has suffered.
Yeah,
that's like the, true. The sales, like the sales were never as big as they were back in the 60s when, you know, Jack Kirby and stuff were on the comic.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. I don't know if anybody, was going to make it work though, I, you know, or make it work better, I guess I should say, would it, you know, Marvel, would be the ones to do it. And the creative minds at Disney. So
I don't, I think at this point they don't, I don't think they could really, it would be hard for them to make a misstep.
It would be,
but of course,
and it would, you know, look, you know, if they did, it would look kind of like Captain Marvel,
right,
where it was, you know, still successful, but not great.
why'd you bring that up?
I don't know. I shouldn't have.
Stupid! I hate that scene so much. The passion, that the scene with the cat. Oh my god!
I do too. It sucks so bad.
That's just the worst. Like years of backstory wasted.
For I called gag. It too. I called it. Like I called it before it even. Like when I saw the trailer of him, you know, calling the cat, trying to get close to it, I was like, cat's gonna scratch his eye out, man. That's how it's gonna happen. And then, sure enough.
And that's the, that's the kind of thing that sends a, like a fan into a tailspin.
Too. Yeah,
like not to get caught up in like, you know, fan expectations and stuff like that. But like you watch that, like you watch Captain America, not Civil War, the Winter Soldier, and he's, you know, all this stuff. Like the last time I trusted somebody,
I lost an eye.
Right. And like you think about it, like, I wonder what happened. That's probably an interesting story. And like, nope, just a cat.
He trusted a cat, and cat scratched him. Stupid.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
Drove
me insane.
I know. Well, not to mention, so it not, yeah, I mean, not to mention the years of backstory from the comics too. It's just like wasted. Like completely. Just, ugh.
One of the, like everybody was talking about all the other problems with that movie. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you're worried about, you know, Brie Larson, all that. She's fine. Look at this. Look at this with the cat. Does anybody else see this? Am I in the world gone mad? This sucks. Yeah,
it sucked so hard. So hard.
Oh boy.
But what can you do? I don't know.
Just move on to the next one.
Yeah, hope the next one's better. If they made Fantastic Four as good as, you know, Captain Marvel, I'd be all right with it, I guess.
I'd be look. It's about getting all the characters up on the screen that and doing it in a way that can please most of the people. Mm-hmm. You're not going to please everybody.
Yeah,
like, there's some people you're just going to be like, well, you know, the Baxter Building didn't have that many windows on that side. You know, but you can't worry about that like that level of fandom.
Right.
So as long as they get it up and it's a decent movie, like I reached a point with the Fox X-Men movies where I was just like, you know what? They don't care about continuity. They don't care about this. As long as it's an entertaining movie, mm-hmm. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm really fine. Like I watched Days of Future Past and, you know, whatever they tried to fix with the continuity, like they threw it in a blender and scrambled it up and now everything's like whatever it is. Like fine. I was entertained for 2 hours, so fine.
Yep.
And then, you know, but like and out of that you get, you know, legit interesting movies like Deadpool and Logan.
Mm-hmm.
So like look, as far as I'm concerned, like as long as they bring it with a you know, a certain amount of class and, you know, treat it with respect and do the best job they can do, make something entertaining and that doesn't insult my intelligence, then you know, I don't care. Great. Bring on the Fantastic Four.
That's all we ask for. That's all we ask for. Hey man, it was good having you on. Thanks again for joining us tonight.
Thanks. My pleasure, man. You don't understand. I was hyperventilating before this started. I'm like, my God. But you're a great host and this is a great show. So I'm happy to be on.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to have you back on.
I'm gonna have to do some yoga. I'm gonna have to get some calm exercises.
Aromatherapy going on before I call. It's always good to have a co-host, a guest who, you know, is well knowledge in as you and I can have a conversation with. Kind of hard sometimes to have conversations about stuff we might not agree on and all that. So thanks again for joining us tonight.
I only have one computer. I can't smash it in anger. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. I think we've covered everything. So we will, with that, we will, like I said, we'll have to have you back on another time and we'll sign out for now and say, keep on nerding on.
And do I say it or do you just?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, goodbye everybody. Okay. I'm Chevy Chase and you're not, I don't know. Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow. That's
yeah. There you go. Okay. There you go.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, UFOFers. Now it's time for some shameless plugs. Find us on Facebook in two different locations. First, our group, Fortress of Fandom. Come join our happy little family. Then, like our page, Fortress of Fandom Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at the FOF Pod. Email us with any questions or comments about the episode at thefof.pod@gmail.com. We are the official podcast of Sugar Glider Comics, written by Shelby Webb and her father, Jason. Check out their work at sugarglidercomics.com. That's sugarglidercomics, comics with an X.com. Music was written and provided by my brother, Hayden, at twostepcuts.com. Check him out for all of your music editing needs. If you're listening to this podcast, congratulations, you found us. Be sure to follow and subscribe. If you liked the episode, share, like, and comment. It helps with our circulation and getting us recognized. And once again, thanks for listening. Tune in next time for more nerd news.